ready for the interview. And if you get a cue live on a laptop, watch what I'm gonna do. Welcome to the show, let them know we got a point of view. Hey, yo, let's have a combo. Say what you feel, be real, that's the motto. Real talk, pronto, Dr. D, PhD, hit an intro. Hold up, wait, gotta be social. Network global, a home for the locals. Gotta be social, network global, a home for the locals.
I literally always tell this to people. I literally have no clue what's going to come out of my mouth. And that's the magic behind my podcast, at least. I don't know other people's, but Carmel Clark, how are you?
Great. Thank you so much. How are you doing, Darian?
I'm great. I was just like, I'm like running from one thing to the next. And I was training these two ladies and I'll just, boom, I got to talk to Carmel. It's like, bam, you know.
Pumped and ready to go.
Pumped and ready to go. And actually, I remember a lot about our previous conversation that we had offline. It was basically a podcast, but it was actually, I think it was the best offline conversation I had with a guest before the podcast.
Oh my God, I'm so glad. It was a phenomenal conversation for me as well. I mean, you just went right in. Yeah. Loved your questions, just straight authentic, you know, which I prefer anyway. I mean, you know, let's talk about real stuff, real things, real people, real important.
Instead of fake stuff, okay?
Yeah.
Talking about real stuff.
Instead of positioning things, it's just, you know,
yes,
follow the golden thread.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing that was lingering, I was like, I'm going to come back to this. And I really remember is we were like, oh, we can go into consciousness. We could talk about this.
So, dude, you just like tapped my sweet spot. Like, that's it right there.
All right. So you mentioned it last time we were offline talking about consciousness. What did you mean by that last time when you said that word consciousness?
Well, I guess when you say that, the first thing that pops into my mind is I see myself when I was about 8 or 9 years old. And I just, you know, my mom used to take us outside the city, you know, the edge of the city to across the highway to this amazing cemetery and gardens and everything. And so 8 or 9 years old, like I just started heading myself out there by myself, alone, just go hang out. And I've thought about that kind of thing. Like, I just loved walking through there. It was so serene and it was far away from like everybody else and life that was going on. And that was just, what was that about, you know? And I look at that young self, that little Carmel, and I have this sense of my reaching to feel my existence, if you could say it that way, you know? That there was just, you know, and to be able to do that by being in surroundings that just kind of reflected, or really not kind of, reflected back aliveness to me, myself. And so with that kind of history, and there's so much in that, right, that I also noticed things like, you know, when I was in high school and everybody, you know, you only look at or smile at the people you know that you are friends with, even though you know a lot of other people. And what's that about too, by the way? Like, and I felt this thing inside of me where I had been, you know, more afraid at these politics that would happen in junior high. And I got into high school and I just felt this kind of like, yeah, this angst about it, this, you know, resistance to it. It was hardcore resistance. And I thought, no, like that doesn't feel good to me. It doesn't feel right, because all of us matter. Like even at high school, like I had this thought, all of us matter. Why are we ignoring each other? Why can't I be brave, you know, in this kind of weird context of high school and just smile at you or say hi, even if you're not going to say it back, even if you're not going to acknowledge that I exist. I don't care, because I can acknowledge that you exist. And that is me respecting myself and knowing that we both matter, right? That was the essence of it. So, you know, this is kind of the beginning of all of this that came around. And then to see throughout my life that I was always reaching for what most expressed consciousness in us as a, you know, species. And not just, I can't say just as a species, but to recognize that consciousness, in my way of seeing it, exists in everything. And how do I try to see it? How do I try to understand that in my living every day? So I know it's kind of a big answer.
You went for a real thoughts? Big answer. let me backtrack. I was listening to a podcast with a gentleman who was like a panpsychist, something like that, a basic panpsychism, which they believe that consciousness exists in like inanimate objects as well.
Okay.
I'm not sure how I feel about that, but I don't know. I'm open-minded to hear stuff, even if it's like, well, I'm not sure. I appreciate that people are exploring different avenues of consciousness. I think that consciousness is kind of like not defined necessarily by a lot of, it's kind of like when you throw like a very vague phrase to a lot of people and people go, oh yeah, I'm motivated. Yeah. Like, what does that mean? Like,
what does it mean?
That's what does that actually mean? Like if you asked a bunch of people, what is motivation? Like you'd probably get some similar things, some different things, but like, what does it mean?
It's a perfect question.
Right. What does consciousness mean? Is it consciousness in the religious sense? Is it consciousness in the maybe kind of metaphysical or biological sense, the universe? Is it carbon? Is it hydrogen? Like, what is it? I think we're always trying to understand consciousness. And then we have this idea of like, well, can consciousness be put into like robots?
Right.
What does it mean to be alive?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
It's a crazy question right there.
Question after question after question. How can you answer those things?
Right. And if we clone, right? If you're actually going to clone another, living thing, is there consciousness in that? How does that come to be? And what does it mean? And what does it mean to my own consciousness, or the idea of that anyway?
Right? I don't want to be cloned. I don't.
Oh God, no.
I don't think I won. Can you imagine? Okay, let's just imagine. Carmel was like, there's like two of you. Like I'm talking not just like identical twins, but like just another you. Like it's crazy.
So the thing that it brings up for me when you say that is like parallel universes, right? And like, just the matter of choices taking two different trajectories and the ability for me to actually see that playing out in front of me would be kind of cool, but I think it would present other problems as well.
I think so. Like, I guess technically, mathematically, it's true or possible. You could have, parallel universes.
Multiverse.
I'm not sure I want to know what the me somewhere else is doing. I'm not sure I'm that interested in that. Like,
oh, really?
Because there's enough going on right now.
Okay, well, that's true. I'm trying to juggle my own life. I don't need to juggle another like million lives.
Darian, times 25. What are you doing? I don't know. Like,
it's a good question. I can't put that on my calendar. It's already full.
I don't know. It kind of actually, and then I think about consciousness and life extension. And I also often think that if you think about it, we're all looking for extension of consciousness on some level in many ways, like whether it's through afterlife consciousness, whether it's through just extending consciousness beyond our planet or through lifespan. Like everyone, I feel, has a very different definition of how they want to continue their consciousness throughout their life.
It's so true. I mean, this is a question that occupies my mind a lot as well, because personally, I feel like consciousness continues. I sense that it does, the way that I interact with the world. And, you can kind of read evidences in different directions and get different conclusions about that. But that is definitely the way that I personally tend. But I also am really careful. Like, I don't want to collapse that into like, well, this is what it looks like, or this is what it means. Right. But in that there's this awareness, like I recognize, for example, cause I love philosophy, right. I'm a huge, background in philosophy, and I read these philosophers and I can't help but just walk inside this, like they wrote these books and expressed themselves in where they were, what they thought about, what was going on. And that consciousness is still living, and it comes in through me and through you and through so many different things. And poets and filmmakers and artists and, even just, people throughout history, right? Consciousness is this sense that it's like living through us to the present day still. You know, even just our ancestors, there's a lot to, you know, be said about that, that people have, you know, definitely brought to the forefront. So, I mean, what do you think about that?
I think consciousness certainly continues on. I think, and I think it's made very apparent. It's like, there are several people that have never seen anyone pass away, like actually be there when they die. And I've definitely experienced that. And I already believed that, but when you watch it, it confirms it to me even more. It's just this lack of animation. And realize the machine is animated by something.
Beautiful.
It doesn't feel tangible. And I feel like there's a whole field of research that's trying to make it tangible.
Yes.
And sometimes I think, I mean, it's great to explore things.
Sure.
But sometimes I think it's done to try to disprove the other aspect of it.
Right.
Kind of like that, oh, this seems like a very kooky pie in the sky thing. But like, why does it always have to be like provable all the time? You know, I think sometimes people are trying to prove stuff. Why does everything have to have an answer all the time?
And that to me goes straight to this idea of, well, we want to be able to have control over it. And for me, that goes kind of to the heart of where I think I feel consciousness really lives, is that it isn't controllable. For me, like I go into like this concept of Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, mm-hmm. the more you can know, and I talk about consciousness this way, I'll say it this way, the more you know about the particle of consciousness, to use the word, the less you can know about where it is. And the more you know about where it is, the less you can know about it. Like, we're in this continual back and forth where, you know, learning how to not try to control everything, to bring it into our total definition or our defining, is very hard for a lot of people, a lot of humans.
Yeah, I think so. And then it's, then there's the background of how you were raised, and maybe you had a very bad experience with consciousness or anything like that. So you set out to try to obliterate the thing that you were raised on because you're angry about it.
Yeah.
Versus looking at it just like, okay, I'm just curious about it. There's curiosity, and then there's kind of revenge sometimes there with it, you know?
I think for me, there's also that aspect of like, well, if I were to tell the story that like I choose everything in my life, it didn't mean that I made it all happen or that I, you know, but like I, where I sit right now, I make the conscious choice to choose my life, right? And if I look at that and they say, okay, if I choose my life, how do I understand where I came from and the things that happened to me and all of that? And it requires me to put it into a completely different framework, but it's one that not only frees me at a fundamental level, which I think it, for me, is an aspect of consciousness, but it also allows me to free everybody else. And I think that for me is key. And you know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you ever look at consciousness as kind of a frequency on some level?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I mean, that's a fascinating question. I mean, you have the great questions for sure. Knowing you just as long as I have, I'm like, this dude has the best questions.
It just flows out of me. I don't know. Literally, I have no clue. It just comes to me. Seriously.
Yeah, you're tapped in. I guess, you know, there's so many different people who've said different things or have different ways of expressing consciousness. And maybe if I, you know, I'm just kind of shooting from the hip here based on the sense that I have about what you said. And my experience has been this concept of connection. So like consciousness is a frequency for me, really expresses as a connection. Is it a connection to another human being or a connection to my surroundings or even a connection to myself? Connection to, there being more, you know, whether somebody believes there's a God, right? Mm-hmm. Or there's something greater, you know, connection to the food that we eat, or a connection to the movement that we have in our lives, you know, connection in these ways. That to me feels like the frequency that you're talking about. What are your thoughts about that?
I always think about it in terms of like people. And like, I don't know. I'm a very feeling oriented person. It's just, I always tell people, I'm like, it's the feels for me. Like if I go somewhere and I don't feel tapped into it, I don't feel it. And I feel that way with people. You know, I talk to tons of people all the time, and everybody's really nice, but there's certain people that you almost feel like this entanglement occurring with the person. Like, so I'll give you an example, like our conversation we had before this was a very, like, I had been there before type of thing. This was an old frequency. This was a frequency I had was familiar to me.
Yes.
But clearly I don't know you. So what is that?
What is that?
Like, what is that?
Perfect question.
I don't understand that. I feel like, is that a form of like conscious frequency? And like, how do we know that kind of that electricity that happens with people, you know?
I think it's a fantastic question. You know, I had an experience when I was in India for a while, and I was traveling around. I was staying in this little village, and I went to the Sikh temple there, and I wanted to experience a Gurudwara, right? I never had, and I had heard about them, and I knew some Sikh people in my life, and there was always something in me that was deeply resonant with them. And, you know, why? Because I never grew up with that. It was never in my, you know, world, my space. So I remember going to the Gurudwara, and the people, nobody spoke any English, which was such a gift as well, right? To just be completely outside of my element walking in. And I was there all alone. And the strangest thing happened. First of all, because I didn't know anything about how they practice. And I received the prasad that when you walk in, they give you, it's gram flour with honey and butter. And they put it right in the palm of your hand and you just eat it. And it represents this idea from the founder of the Sikh faith, where he said, people can't come to know God if they're hungry or thirsty. And so he spent his life helping people to be fed and to have these basic things that they needed so that they were free then to come to find God themselves, right? And I loved this idea. Anyway, I came in and I came to the front where the Guru Granth Sahib is. It's the book, right? Because the Sikhs have this idea that, or their belief is, I should say that way, the belief is that God is not found in this image. God is found in the seeking of knowledge, of awareness, of understanding, which I love that. But then I moved around to the left and all the way around to the right. I walked all the way around, and then I came to stand in front, and I was just overcome suddenly and began to just sob. And I was all alone, and that went on for quite a while. And then I finally moved off to the side and sat in meditation for a while, just sitting with the quiet of it. And I found out much later that that is the way that you move around when you come in. You know, people bring an offering of some kind of flowers, incense, and then you move around from the left all the way around to the, you know, to the center, to the right in the offering that you're making. And this is the kind of thing I, you know, having that experience and then finding those things out afterwards. And I think, where did that come from? How, you know?
I know. It's kind of like, makes me think of, I can't remember who said this, but basically it was kind of like everyone has a signal. It's like the brain is the receiver.
Yeah.
And there's a signal that is the larger signal. And we're the antenna for the signal. And I think that idea is coming online a lot more.
I think you're right.
Yeah. And versus just kind of almost like it's all tangible. Like this, just like, this is why this happens. This is why I think the mystery of things is beautiful.
And I agree.
Sometimes we're so into factual things and this has to be explained.
Right.
But like the mystery is also beautiful. And knowing that you may never know.
That's right.
That's important.
That to me is what you have talked about, feminine energy, you know, and you actually promote people being able to understand and become more connected to or aware of and accepting of feminine energy with themselves and with others and how we interact. And for me, the unknown or the mystery, that space that's undefined, is a true space of the feminine, right?
Yeah.
It makes sense to me when you look at, you know, the concepts in Taoism of yin and yang. Always the feminine, when we try to define it, it's really like impossible, because it's the field, it's the the possibility of everything, but it's not definable. That's where the yang comes in, everything that's defined and known. And I think that we are very uncomfortable being in the space of the mystery and the unknown as a species, especially particularly, I just have to say, in the West. And for me, this is something I spend a lot of time working intentionally to help people recognize and then start to engage intentionally and consciously, engage with the unknown and become more comfortable with that.
Yeah, I think it's an important concept to discuss. I was thinking about this, the concept of transformation. Also, I know this is important in your work.
It is key in my work, yeah.
Right? And I think about transformation in the sense of like almost these lifetimes within lifetimes. And that I often feel like my life is like these chapters of these different lives that I've lived, of this transformation. But on your end, how have you come to understand transformation and then working with people about that?
For me, I really see transformation as the spark of consciousness, like we're talking about, and that it can happen anytime, anywhere. Looking back to what I was talking about with walking through the hallways of my high school and my consciously choosing to look into the eyes of other people in the hallway and to smile or to say hello, which was, you know, like the craziest thing anybody could do in high school, right?
Yeah.
And that I didn't do it for attention. I didn't do it for these other reasons. I did it because I knew that I mattered and I knew that they mattered. It was just simply that. And that I would not be cowed by any kind of peer pressure into not being myself with others. And for me, that really speaks to this essence of transformation, where something like a key goes in a lock and it turns and there's a click and something opens that was not yet open or had been, you know, kept apart or away in some way, right?
Yeah.
That's the feeling of transformation for me. And that my idea, my belief, my work really revolves around this idea that every one of us is what I call the effect of transformation, or the transformation effect in the world. And the more we listen and pay attention just to that simple thing inside, the more that spark that we are hits off or clicks, or the key goes in a lock and turns it. And we don't even know what the lock is. We don't even know that maybe this is the key that fits that lock, but that sincere, authentic, organic showing up, you know, intentionally for whatever it is in the moment, you know, it could be the key in the lock of it just suddenly becoming aware of the most beautiful morning, right?
Yes.
Or it could be this other thing where you look at somebody and they know that you see them. You're in a grocery store aisle, right? And that you see them. That's real. And people can be uncomfortable with it, but it's real, right? We just don't know that effect that we have in the world when we really pay attention.
Man, it makes me think about, I'm doing this docuseries about the Children of God sex cult with members who survived.
Oh, yes. It. Yeah. Yes.
So I've been doing the interviews with the members, former members. Wow. Crazy.
Wow.
But they learn in this technique called flirty fishing that the person who created it, it's just a way for them to like beg on the streets and make money. I swear there's a point to this. I swear it's like, and it's not just a random story.
I'm just like, wow. Okay.
It's crazy. But they talk about like, they would learn how to manipulate people to give them money.
Yeah.
And how they would do that was to basically help people, to show people that they're seeing them. Actually, so like one lady, her and her mother were part of this. They were kind of brainwashed about it, you know, and so they would go into like a gas station and say, hey, I need something, and they would look at the person and they would really like stare deeply into them.
Yeah.
And she said it was a technique they used, and you realize that was the first time that person felt like somebody actually saw them.
Yes.
That's the relation to what you were saying. And it's like, how often do you do that with somebody? You actually see them. And it's intense. And it may be the first time in their life somebody was like, I've never been delved that deeply into. You peered into me.
Yes.
People don't do that with each other. Uh-uh. It's very superficial, you know.
It is. And then my question following on what you said is, how do people understand the difference between somebody who's doing it as a manipulation, which to me is quite diabolical, and exploitation, versus somebody who is sincere? And that is the core of the transformational leadership work that I am passionate about and that I do. Because first of all, I speak to, if you have any kind of authority, it is your responsibility to learn how to not use the trust of other people. If they give you their trust on any level, your number one responsibility is to be accountable to yourself to not take that trust and use it. Even if you think you have their best interests at heart, you are out of line. That is not our job. Our job is to show up completely on the same level with other people and in that connection to help them recognize themselves and trust themselves, not us.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you ever talk about like transcendent leadership in conjunction with transformational leadership?
I love that. What do you think? When you say transcendent leadership, I want to know what that means to you, please.
So I kind of came across this years ago. I kind of like informally knew it, but Gallup had done this really super long-term longitudinal study where they had studied over 1 million managers on I think 30, 40 countries, like this all encompassing thing. And they wanted to know like how frequent, what was the frequency of transcendent leadership? Being like the leader who is so inspiring, is so kind of creates awe and creates loyalty and trust. And you know, that person that they look at you, there's something there when they see like, wow, like they peered into me. And Gallup was saying that it's so rare to find this leader, very rare for this person to exist in most work environments. That's why it's transcendent. That's why it's rare that basically one in 10 managers has even some of these qualities. It's mostly not that or that.
I agree.
So I look at transcendence as like that person or the leader, they transcend the position.
I love that.
They transcend it. It's no longer this title or that title. They've transformed into something beyond that position.
Right.
It's hard to explain.
I think that there's a great way to explain what you said. And it comes from a quote by Leela Watson, who from Australia. And I love this quote. It's core to my everyday, right? And she was speaking specifically to civil rights and human rights there in things that were going on. She said, if you've come to help me, you're wasting your time. But if your freedom is bound up with mine, then let us work together. And for me, when you talk about this, that's that touching of that greater possibility, that principle and that greater possibility that our greater possibility exists in this space between us. How do I reach to find that? Even if you don't know how to, I still can. And as I do that, then it has this effect, right? There's a definite transformational effect that occurs when I hold to that greater possibility between us. Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. I often think of it too, like how do people spot it? How do you know? Is like the transcendence so overwhelmingly different than everything else that you see it and you're just like, wow? Or is it like that in our current society, we see transcendence as someone who has had all these great ideas, they made a lot of money. It's like, wow, look at this, their transcendence. I never think about it that way. No. I don't think about it that way.
No,
it's
lifestyle
nothing
and
to do with that.
Are
nothing
not transcendence. That. That's right.
Yeah. But I think we have this feeling in society that that is part of it. Like that this person has achieved so much, they've transcended this business they're in.
Yeah.
I never think about it that way.
Yeah. We have social authority built on that idea now because of social media and the internet. It's rampant. I mean, it existed all along, but it's just really taken over. And that's one of the things that I try to help people break down or dismantle is this concept, because if I read a book that somebody else has written, I'm always looking to see, where do you take this to ultimately? If it comes to lifestyle and bank account, then I can't go there, because the real potential that exists is in the greater possibilities between us, not in the lifestyle and bank account that we can tout as, this is why I'm successful. For me, when I teach, you know, and I'm teaching people this transformational coaching method, right? I help them have to come to this awareness that if you do it with one, you do it with a million. If you do it with a million, you do it with one. There is no difference in that. And if you have a difference inside of you, that is your own issue that you have to work through, right, until you come to the clarity that one is 1 million people and 1 million is one. They are no different. And when we can hold that, that to me is an element of this transcendent leadership you're talking about. The way that I show up in that way, the potential that I hold inside in that, you know, in that way really does, it's more than the sum of the parts. It's synergistic. It creates more possibility.
What are some experiences you've had encountering maybe someone who maybe had a natural transformational leadership ability or transcendence, and just you saw it in them like pretty quickly?
The number one thing that I would say is that they had no desire to take power or control from anybody else. Mm. That they were very conscious of being exactly themselves, showing up for, you know, the other person being exactly who they were, right? There was no need to validate themselves at any level from the other person. That to me is one of the first things I would say.
I love that. I love that. It's kind of funny. It's like not asking for attention.
Like, yes.
Not seeking it. Not seeking it. It's a great line in Secret Life of Walter Mitty. Ben Stiller, love that. You know this line, right?
Yes,
Sean Penn. And they're in the mountains and he's taking the picture. Oh. You know, and he's like, you know, beautiful things don't ask for attention.
Oh my God. I so love that you just said that. That's seriously
chilling.
Chilling. Ah, yes.
I hold that very dearly to me all the time.
Me too. Oh my God. Me too. And to look at other people that way for me, right? Like that's how to look at other people and just see like beautiful things do not ask for attention. And that tells the truth to me every time. Ooh.
Powerful. I know my wife and I, first time we watched that in the movie theaters, we looked at each other. I was like, I was getting like choked up. Like that hit my frequency of consciousness extreme. It was like a sledgehammer.
Right there.
And it confirmed so much for me about how I want to exist. And like, I don't want to be seeking all this attention for the vanity of it.
Exactly. And there's so much lost when we do, right? Yeah. That's the, when people, for me, if we're really, you know, expanding in our own conscious awareness and recognizing I lose so much when I seek for that versus when I can be with myself, be in myself, and then how I experience and interact with other people creates more than the sum of the parts, more than was there before. And to just show up to that, you know, it isn't me. It isn't that. It's all, you know, both of us, all of us, that possibility can create so much good on this planet. And that's not me showing up, looking in your eyes, asking for something, and then being the first person who's seen you. That's me just showing up as myself. I don't need to get anything out of you or out of this, right? Yeah. Like you do your podcasts. Like
yeah.
You just show up and you're like, okay, let's see what happens. Up,
man. There's no script. You know, it's funny when people are like, all right, what are we going to talk about? Like, what are the topics? I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, we got to be okay with not knowing. You know, it's like, do you know what you're going to talk about when you meet somebody new all the time? I don't know. Like, at least when I meet people, like I say, oh, let's meet for coffee or something. I don't have like a written out agenda. Maybe other people do. I just kind of let see where it happens. Even the awkwardness is fine.
Totally.
Learn something in the awkwardness. Like our frequencies are not there, man. It's something. It's okay. It's totally fine.
It's okay.
But the magic is like coming together, having the conversation. You're building. It's like these tendrils. It's like the veins are coming together. We're linking. Yeah. where this neural like handshake is happening. And it's happening virtually now with people.
I know.
And in person.
And in person. I think that's absolutely true. And I think our intention is such a part of it, how well we know ourselves to be the most authentic that we can is a part of that. You know, when I started doing my work online, I took it out of having offices into doing it online so that I could live location independent in the world. Yeah. And when I did that, people would say, oh, well, you know, like, but that's going to not be as personal. It's not going to be as close. And what they have found, and this was way back before this was really taking off, like it has now, and now with the pandemic, but they would be astonished at how connected we could be because it isn't based on proximity. Yeah. Like that there, when you really connect, you know, that heart energy, that soul, spirit, energy, intention, that, you know, I am completely right here, presence with you right now, nowhere else, that there isn't this geographic proximity factor that has to be there. And then they would meet me in person for the first time, maybe a year after we've been working together. And they're like, oh my God, like, I feel like I've known you forever. I'm like, well, in a sense, yeah. It's yes. No different, right?
It's no different. Actually, I have a client that I've been training for 4 years. And we never met. We've been doing all live virtual for a really long time. And we met for the first time last month in California. And it was easy. It's like we had built this pathway already. This bridge had already been built. And so I was challenging people. So, oh, that stuff, it doesn't work and stuff. Like, I don't know. Maybe you haven't tried it. Or maybe it's just not your frequency, whatever. But don't bash my frequency on this. Like, this is real to me. If it's not real to you, it doesn't mean my reality isn't real for me.
Right. Right. That's a good way to, that's a good, good check on that. I do feel like when we are really present with people, there is something that happens.
Yes.
You know, regardless of where we are on the planet, when we do it.
Yes.
For sure. And to me, that also means, you know, in your question about consciousness and your other question about transformation, for me, that personally feels like a responsibility, right? How do I choose to be aware of that in a responsibility to myself, right?
Yeah. You know what's interesting? Like, I actually really thought about this yesterday when I knew I was going to be talking to you. Because sometimes you think of somebody and then they make you think of something that starts cycling in your brain.
True.
Right? You're like, oh, this person represents this thought process for me. And I kept thinking, like, with my podcast, I want to be more intentional about talking to people like Carmel. I want to find more of these people. Like, how do I create a formula to find that frequency over and over and over again? I think I've gotten better at it. I really do. There's something there. There's some type of equation. Maybe it's not tangible, but that a feeling that I can get to try to like pinpoint that, you know? I don't know. But I thought about that when this was going to happen. I was amazing. Like, wait a minute.
That's an honor. Very much so. Because I feel the same, right? Knowing that we were going to talk and that my feeling is, oh, where is he going to lead us? Like, you know, where is it, are his questions going to like open doors for us to go to?
Who knows?
And what a gift.
Yes.
I mean, that for me, that's also, it's a good practice for me to be in your company for that reason, yeah. Because I think, you know, the quality of our thinking and the possibilities of our thinking are in the questions we ask. And you are so just tapped in to listen to the
Thank
questions.
You. Quality of thinking. That's an interesting phrase. The quality of thinking. I have to think about that phrase, the quality of thinking. I don't think I've heard that before.
What does it bring up?
That's
for
new to me. Well, I mean, it's kind of like what's, you think of quality. You know, so this is a quality piece of work. Mm-hmm. This is a quality conversation. Like, what does that mean? Like, what is everything about me is like always, what does that mean? Like, we need to like think about this. Like, quality thinking, or do you have like junky thoughts? Do you have like
I think we do.
Like, right, random thoughts? Do you have like very kind of like trash TV thoughts? There's like a hierarchy of thinking.
Yeah.
Right. And I personally like to exist in a higher level of like operationalized thinking, where I ask questions, we define things, and but right. we're okay if things we can't figure it out.
That's right.
And then ask really, really big questions when they come to me, just like big existential questions. To me, that's quality thinking.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean for you?
Well, the first thing that I think about as you're saying this is that saying that we've all heard, small minds talk about others, mediocre minds talk about events, and great minds talk about ideas, right?
Forgot about that.
Yeah. I think that was one of the greatest compliments I've received from a client years ago who I thought of her as a really excellent thinker. And she said this to me. She said, "Carmel, you know, I can always count on you to talk about ideas, like greater ideas that that's where you want to engage in." And I don't think I was really aware that that's what I always did at that point in time. So it was really a wonderful reflection. But quality thinking, I agree with you completely, to be able to, you know, reach into the ether, into the unknown, mm-hmm. into the things that we don't normally think about, ask questions about that, and continue, you know, running down that thread to see where it takes us, and to be delighted by it or intrigued by it, curious, right? That endless curiosity. I love yes. that idea of endless curiosity. But then also in that, the quality thinking for me is connected to what comes of that thinking, right? Because I don't think that for me, it's not, I can't separate that out. You know, I look at my being in the world as always producing something, even if I'm just sitting there with like not speaking to anybody, nobody's around me, there's always something coming out of my being alive in the world. And what is that? You know, is it, you know, is it trash thoughts and, you know, whatever energy that, you know, promotes, or is it the greater possibilities that I think about with my clients? You know, when I think about people in my life or I connect in, for me, it has to lead to something that's more, something or something that's greater, you know, in them, or something that's helpful, something that's giving or serving in some way, right? And maybe we just practice at that to where it becomes just the way that we do that, you know, when nobody's around, nobody's watching, nobody knows the inside of our heads. And, you know, to catch when I get into that spiral where, you know, I'm upset by something, or I feel like I'm kind of, you know, circling back in on myself, and that's not helpful too. And to be able to disrupt that and move myself back into the other way,
yes.
to me, that feels like quality thinking.
Yeah, actually catching your thoughts is another thing. Yes. That's all I do is I just, somebody says something and I just center on it. I'm just like,
perfect.
What is that? Catching your thoughts. I think that's a form of like more a higher version of thinking, because it's mm-hmm. easy to get into like this run of like bad, like really poor thinking practices yes. or judgmental thinking practices.
Exactly.
But then if you like catching those thoughts, like, why am I saying this? Like, why, you know what, why am I talking like this? Why am I judging these people? I don't know anything about it. Like, that's right. a higher order thinking to me. The ability to like stop yourself and then evaluate what you're saying and then to make a turn in a different direction.
You know, I think that, you know, when I was growing up, my mom, she always, she taught us principles, and she said, be true to principles and not to people, which I love to this day, right? Because I think that to me, principles will always serve all of us. So if we're being true to those, then we're not going to, you know, get off track like we could otherwise, being true to a person for whatever reason. And one of the things that she said was defend the absent. And from the time I was really small, defend the absent. It would, for her, as she explained it to me, was this idea, if somebody is not there to speak for themselves, how do you stand for them with them not being there? And that doesn't mean that we, you know, accept the bad actions of other people. It means that we stand for the principle of the thing and we stand for that person's greatest possibility, yeah. Right? That's probably a little bit deep and complicated, but it makes sense, right?
No, it makes perfect sense. It's, you know, it just makes me think about like what we're doing, what right. I do all the time with people. I think this is a very innate thing in humans that started a very long time ago. It's talking by a fire, listening to a radio,
yeah,
listening to people talk. People like hearing other people talk and people like to talk to other people. I think we downplay this way too much in our society. Like if you're talking to people uninterrupted in this type of version, you're a plant, you're going to grow.
Yes.
Your photosynthesis is happening. You're being watered. You're being fed. And I look at it this way, like I've recently got into gardening. You want to talk about like a key switching?
Oh yeah.
This is the most unlikely thing for me to be into. easily like me of like 20, when I was 25, you'd be like, hey, you know what? In like 20 years, you're going to be like really into gardening. But like, I don't think so.
I don't think so. Not going to happen. No.
But I watched last year, my wife got this pumpkin plant and I watched it grow every day.
Yeah.
And I watched the leaves cover the pumpkins when it got too hot. And then I watched the leaves open up when it cooled. And it was like, click. It was like,
click.
I need this in my life.
Wow.
Because the thing is, when you feed a plant, especially a vegetable or whatever, it feeds you.
That's right.
When you do this, when you talk to people uninterrupted, you have the conversation, you're feeding each other.
Yes.
You're creating a stronger frequency, a stronger connection. That Wi-Fi signal is like 4 or 5 bars. You know, like,
yes.
Is your signal, you got one bar, you need to talk to more people.
You need to talk to more people.
To more people.
And have great quality of thinking, you're right?
Yes. I want 4 bars.
Let's go for 5. Let's go for 5 bars.
I want 5G.
It's so true. It's so true. But don't you find when you have these great conversations with people, you know, and sometimes I have to think that you're the one that just instigates and opens up a greater elevation for the people you talk to, right? Sometimes they come in and they're just like ready and just go from that level that you're
just sometimes. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But other times they're suddenly like kind of woken up to come to that level, and how wonderful it has to be to experience that and watch it happening in front of you. As I mean, isn't that
it definitely happens? Yeah. You know, I think the other part that is key, and I've talked to a lot of other podcasters and I said, this is the part that's missing though. This is the missing part. You have to nurture it after that. You have to water it. You can meet somebody and have this great conversation, but over time, it doesn't have to be a lot. You have to reach back. You have to say, hey, loved having you on. So awesome to meet you. Right. I just want to see how you're doing. How's your life going? Like, you got to water those connections. You have to over time, you know?
I think that's very true. And to, as we do that, to just feel the openness and not feel any kind of obligation, because I think too often people feel like, oh, I've got to take it on as a responsibility, instead of the way that you talk about exercise and movement as being fun, like to do that with the connections with people, right? Yeah. To reach out and have it just be fun and be able to be like in the unknown. If it just is like a moment and you're like, great. If it's a little bit more, awesome, you know, right?
Yeah. I'll tell you a good example. Like, early on in my podcast, this had to be like episode 20 something, like way back machine. And I had this lady on, Michelle Miller. I think she's in Florida. Such a nice person. And my thing is, once I meet somebody over time, I either like text them or email them over time. Hey, how's it going? Hope you're doing well. So she's been around for a long time in kind of my atmosphere. So I have texted her tons of times throughout 3-4 years. And this last message I sent her, again, what I normally do, hey, how's your life going? How are you doing? I'm here for you. If you need somebody to listen, blah, blah, blah. She sent back this huge message like, you've been sending me these notes for 3-4 years in a row. And just from our, like, you never forgot about me. Like, who does that?
You know? Who does that?
I was like, yeah, but that's the watering, you know, it's like, and some plants need more water. Some plants need less.
Yes.
In order to grow and survive. And so I kind of take that approach with people. Some people, I feel this frequency that I got to water this plant most days or months. And some of them, it's like, okay, this is a perennial. It's going to come back. You know, I maybe need a once a year type of thing. There's a lot of comparison to nature, if you think about it.
And there is.
It's crazy, actually.
It is actually. Some of my most profound experiences in my life have come from people who, I remember one client in the past, he was a farmer down in southern Utah, and just this quiet, deep human. Like, I wondered, his thoughts traveled the universe, and like, he never said them out loud. And I just couldn't get enough of him, right? And I wanted to know, and he'd just say, you know, a little bit, but it was in that, because he was so in nature, in the seasons and the ways of moving with the flow, right? And unhurried, but very, very aware of what was going on. And he wasn't, you know, didn't have all these degrees, and he didn't do all this work in consciousness like I do, and like all this stuff. And yet here he was, so aware, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nature, you're right. Nature is this deep instructor of ourselves.
Deep.
Yeah.
Deep instructor. It's lasting. It will continue to be here beyond our physical selves, which makes me think, as we wind up here, like, how do you want to be remembered?
I actually have thought a lot about that, because one of the ways that I keep myself honest is, I look at beyond my death, where I decompose, and even, you know, my family lines are, you know, exhausted or whatever's taken place, and, you know, whatever kind of marker there might be, like, it's long since lost. Right. And what is it inside that I want to continue? And for me, you know, part of it is, you know, the books that I'm working on to go out into the world and the ideas that they can produce. That's a big part of it for me, of it's not me being remembered. It's the possibilities that I can put out, and that those will continue to spark. And even if the books get lost or forever gone, that the ideas that are in them continue to spark and further move through humanity as we continue on. That's the way that I consider being remembered, I guess. Yeah. And then in the short term, I guess I would want to be remembered from the true love and connection that I have with other people in the world, that they know that I saw them and that they matter, and that between us, this was an absolutely understood thing.
Yeah, that's beautiful. It's absolutely.
What about you?
I honestly, this is going to sound kind of funny, like, well, several things. One, that people remember that I enjoyed being a good person to other people.
Yeah.
That was a good example. Hopefully that was a good example of goodness and kindness to other people. One, it's important that people remember I love having a good time. I love having a great time. Want to be alive. Almost any party I'm saying yes to. It's almost a yes at almost any party. It's like, hey, this is a chance to laugh and have fun and toast. And like, being alive is very important to me. And the process of being excited, holding space for great times and deep conversations, that hopefully somebody remembers that we had a really good time together. That, pretty simple. We had a good time together.
That goes right to my heart. I so get it.
That's some good, because you know, there's people you don't remember good times with, you know, it's like, it's not a great memory.
That's right.
It's not you don't want to be remembered as the person that was like the downer.
Right.
Or, you know, talk too much, or was boring. Like, right. Who wants to be that?
Or uninterested people because you had so much of your own stuff you were so caught up in.
Or you just blew your life into other people. Like, I got so many problems.
Yeah.
The bad listener. Like, I don't want any part of that. Like, I'll take the good time guy.
That's a true legacy for sure.
Yeah. So, well, Carmel, listen, this could go on for ages. It literally could go on for ages.
Yeah.
You are a wonderful, incredible human that I enjoy spending time with. I really do.
Thank you.
I've been looking forward to this for a long time.
So have I.
I mean that.
So. Thank you. Yeah, no, thank you, because it's just been effortless, right?
Effortless.
Entire conversation. I just feel like we kind of flew around the cosmos a bit today together.
5G.
5G. On steroids.
5G. This is the real Starlink right here.
It is. Thank you for bringing out the best possibilities in people, including myself. And I really appreciate that today so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And tell all the lovely people how they could get more of Carmel Clark.
Thank you. I lead programs, and right now I have an event coming up. I do it online. I call it the Wake Up Call event. And this one is specifically focused on our imposter syndrome and transforming our imposter syndrome, because I think it's such a prevalent thing. So that's coming up on May 19th and 21st. I do it as a two-part, Thursday evening and again Saturday morning. Anybody can join, and it's high touch interaction in this kind of work in the Wake Up Call event. So it's not like a workshop per se. It's more you come in and we do real life right there together for you to move your needle to start that transformative process. So that's the Wake Up Call event, specifically focusing on the imposter syndrome. It's May 19th and May 21st. And I have the link for people to check it out, and they can register if they want. So that'll be available for anybody who would like to join in with me. That's the up and present thing that's happening now.
Wonderful, beautiful stuff. Everyone, Carmel Clark, thank you so much.
Thank you, Darian.